This is WMUK's Let's Hear It, Music of the Moment in West Michigan. I'm Kara Lawrence. Thanks for joining me tonight. We're going to be looking at some of the events coming up in the Michigan Festival of Sacred Music, which begins tomorrow. I'm speaking with soprano Christy Catt of the ensemble Tapestry, an ensemble that has appeared multiple times at the Michigan Festival of Sacred Music, and they're returning this Friday to perform in the Holy Family Chapel at Nazareth Center on Gull Road, a program of works that are based on a very ancient text called the Song of Solomon or the Song of Songs. Christy, how nice to talk to you again. Thanks for taking the time today.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So Tapestry has been working together for a long time. I think you recently celebrated 20 years?
Yes, 20 years.
What are some of the benefits of building that kind of history together?
Well, we feel really lucky that we've been able to do this for so many years together. And it's nice because we really have developed a common language over all these years. We can sort of read each other's thoughts, and it just makes the spirit, the process of working on the music really rich because we know each other so well and can really dive into the music really fully together.
How many individuals are actually in the group? Is it three?
Well, there are three singers, myself, Danielle Tosich, a lovely alto, and Lori Monahan, who's a mezzo-soprano, and Shira Common is honorary member, often traveling with us, and she adds viol, which is an old version of a fiddle, and she also sings. And then for this concert, we're also bringing along a guest, Mehmet Sandikol, who's going to be playing oud and some Turkish wind instruments as part of our sound for the concert.
It sounds like a very ancient sort of sound we'll be hearing.
It's actually, it is. You're going to be hearing some, especially with some of the viol and the sounds that are exotic and from the distant past. But we also are singing some new pieces that were written for us or that we fell in love with. And sometimes people aren't sure which ones are new and which are old, but it has kind of an old and new quality that just keeps it fresh and fun to listen to.
Tapestry as an ensemble has been together for 20 years, and the ensemble performing this program based on the Song of Songs also goes back quite a ways. You have a 1998 album called The Song of Songs, Come Into My Garden. I'm wondering how the program has evolved and developed over time.
That's a great question. There's a slight difference in the title of this concert. We originally released a recording with Telarc called Song of Songs, Come Into My Garden. We toured that. It was one of our most popular programs. And then a few years ago, we just really decided we wanted to return to the garden. And so that's actually what we call this program, Song of Songs, Return to the Garden. We repeat some of our most favorite pieces, but there's quite a lot of new work on it. I would guess it's almost half and half, new pieces and then pieces from the past. So just going in more directions. We've all gotten interested in collecting different pieces of music that are inspired by or have, the lyrics from the Song of Songs. And we also include a beautiful piece by composer David Lang that is not specifically quoting Song of Songs. It's a Yiddish piece and just a stunning, beautiful piece. But the spirit of it and the this lover who's thinking of her love and the way she's speaking and the metaphor she uses, even though it's not a Song of Songs text, it's kind of, we think of it as like a cousin.
Come
a really nice mix of pieces we've done in the past that we really love. If people saw that concert years ago, they'll have some familiar pieces, but then quite a lot of new work as well.
Okay, Christy, here's the big question.
Okay.
For those of us, including myself, with a fairly non-religious background, please give me a crash course in the Song of Songs.
Absolutely. What's interesting about the Song of Songs is that you find it in the Old Testament of the Bible, and nowhere in the book of Song of Songs do you find anything that you would think of. It doesn't talk about God, or it's not particularly religious. It's really a beautiful love song. There's images of lovers calling out to one another, meeting and missing each other, and a lot of imagery of gardens and the smells. And so it's sort of taking you back in time to this beautiful love story. And we find it in both the Jewish and the Christian religions. And then we find the imagery also in Hindu and Muslim, in other spiritual texts. You find the kind of imagery and poetry about love poetry like this. And different groups interpret it in different ways. Some people take it as literature as is, love story, and others take it as allegory. And depending on the background of or the religion, there's different allegories that you can place on the story. We merely present it and let people take it how they wish to take it. And we find it fascinating that in our world that can be so divided, and at the same time we share such a beautiful thing, you know, if we kind of find that to be a hopeful thing for humans, that we share something like this.
How has this ancient text inspired different reactions from different composers over time?
There's a lot of settings out there, and what you'll hear on our program is Ashkenazi chant. So this is the oldest, the Hebrew text, and then also you'll have Western chant, Christian chant, and both are modal and single line. Then people started to write harmonized versions, and we will do polyphonies, where sometimes you might take one setting of a song, and then you just layer another setting over the top of it, and you have these layers of melody running over each other, and they're very beautiful. And then over time, people started writing more chordal arrangements, and we have modern arrangements. I think that the beautiful poetry and the imagery really called out to composers over time, and they respond in their own personal way, bringing the text to life in a variety of settings and ways.
I understand that you practice yoga and enjoy that very much. I'm going to pivot here into music used to accompany yoga. As a musician, does it bother you when inappropriate music is accompanying the practice, or do you have preferences?
That's a good question. That's a very interesting question. And, you know, I think that it's such a personal decision from each yoga teacher. And it's a chance for a yoga teacher to bring more of themselves in their teaching to their students. I personally don't use it. When I teach yoga, we practice, and then actually I teach my own style of yoga that I've developed over the years, where we actually end up singing. So there's singing involved. But when I go to yoga classes, and I like to go to lots of different classes and have different experiences, I sometimes love the music and sometimes I don't. A yoga teacher has an opportunity to be an artist with the way they program. And when I've been in a really, when I've really enjoyed it, is when the teacher has managed to craft a yoga series and the music fits with the way the energy is raising up. Maybe you're heading to some sort of pose and the music can actually help you find that energy or sustain something, but it can also be really distracting. So, or haphazard. So I think it's really, I don't have a one way or another opinion. I just kind of think it's up to the ability of the yoga teacher to do a good job with programming music if they choose to do that.
You teach at the New England Conservatory as well. You've been based in the East, in Boston area, for quite a while. What kind of students do you typically work with?
Well, you know, I'm really lucky. I have a very diverse group of students coming through my door into my studio, and I really love that. I teach in it's called the Department of Contemporary Improvisation, and it's a program that was started by Gunter Schuller and Rand Blake back in the 70s, and it sort of explores the intersection of classical jazz, folk tradition, modern music, the music that we're listening to today and interacting with. And so I work as a vocal instructor, and I do a lot of body work with my students so that they are singing in a healthy and a strong way. And I work with them on artistic expression. But the music that's coming to me from these students can be from all over the world. It might be music that they're composing. I work with composers who are wanting to work with their own voice so that they can be so that they can then use that as they write a choral piece or even transfer vocal ideas into a symphony. I might be working with a singer-songwriter who's figuring out the parameters of her own voice so that she can, you know, sing her music as well as she can. I have people wanting to do musical comedy or classical work, so it's really fun. I have a Dropbox for my students who it says, you know, Christy's listening, and my students will put in what they're listening to, and it helps inspire me, give me ideas, and also keep up with what they're doing. And so my listening is really diverse, and I love it. You know, it keeps me fresh. It keeps me. Sometimes I hear something, I'm like, I'm going to take that and run with it and do something else on my own with it, you know, so it's really fun.
Is it difficult to be teaching improvisation and then have to assign a grade?
You know, it's not, because you work with a person where they are, and it's not just improvisation. You know, with people I'm working with, them, you know, they're developing technique. A lot of times improvisation leads to composition. So there are a lot of concretes that come out of the process. And, you know, it's really how if someone's growing and how present they are, how hard they're working, how much growth they're making. So I could see how it would seem like it would be hard, but it's pretty clear. I think no one's surprised, student or teacher, how it plays out.
Now, before you came and moved to the East Coast, you grew up in a town very much like Kalamazoo, a university town in the Midwest.
I did. I grew up in Lawrence, Kansas, and I go back a lot. I have friends there and ties to the University of Kansas. I did my undergraduate work there, and you know, I left to go off and do music, which took me first to New York and then to Austria and then back to New York and then now Boston. I've been in Boston for, I think, 17 years now. But it was great to start off where I started off in Kansas. I really enjoy touring to towns like Lawrence and Kalamazoo and St. Cloud, Minnesota. There's all these cities across the United States and in Europe too, but really it's unique in, I think, in the States, where there are these areas where there's energy and excitement around music and communities. And I've come back to Kalamazoo so many times now. I know the host family I'm going to stay with. I know people through coming back over the years. So, you know, it's a really nice way to have community.
Oh, that's so nice to hear. I'm really looking forward to seeing you at Holy Family Chapel this Friday. Christy, thanks so much for chatting with me today.
Oh, it's a pleasure. I'll look forward to chatting with you afterwards.